Welcome to a refreshing hour of business innovation talk. This is Innovate and Servitize Your Business for Balanced Growth, co-presented by InnoLifters and Servitize. It's time to leave the status quo and move your company in exciting new directions. Here's your host and moderator, Bonnie D. Graham. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is season one of a brand new podcast, Innovate and Servitize Your Business for Balanced Growth. Bonnie D. Graham here. Bonnie D. in the house, happy to be here. We've got a very, very hot topic for you today. I have a panel of four experts. You're going to learn, you're going to be inspired, you're going to be engaged because they care a great deal about this topic. So let me start off with something kind of funny, and I'll get around to exactly what we're talking about. In 1970, oh my, somebody can do the math on how long ago that was. Kermit the Frog, voiced by Muppets creator Jim Henson, sang, "It's not easy being green." Oh, I'm not going to sing that. Don't, Joseph, don't make me sing, please. It's a big mistake. Back then, the notion of being green was a fantasy. Well, we were just talking about a frog. But the looming oil shortage demonstrated the dangers of global overdependence on fossil fuels. Hence the lesson. But it took decades to take hold. Fast forward, being green, and I'm putting big quotes around that, air quotes, is becoming so ordinary that a 2020 study by the U.S. SIF Foundation, which is a membership organization focused on, you guessed it, sustainability, found that roughly $1 out of $3 invested in the U.S., that comes to $17.1 trillion with a T, dollars, has a sustainable mandate, and they say, that's a lot of green. And that's a double entendre, we know, because we're talking about money and we're talking green. I have a couple of more quotes for you. PwC's 2021 Consumer Intelligence Series survey on ESG, okay, says 91% of businesses believe their companies have a responsibility to act on ESG issues. 83% of consumers said companies should be actively shaping their ESG best practices. And 86% of employees prefer to support or work for companies that care about the same issues they do. And I have one more quote here. BCG Global Survey, October 2021, reported that despite good intentions, companies say they're struggling to cut their emissions in line with targets. They're concerned about reducing greenhouse gas emissions. They have set targets for reducing emissions at least one scope, and only 11% have cut their emissions in line with their ambitions in the past 5 years. So going green, I don't think we're there yet. So what's the scoop? What are we really talking about here? ESG and sustainability. They sound like trendy buzzwords. They're new. Everybody's talking about them. That's because of increased governmental regulations, increased consumer awareness, which I just mentioned in one of my quotes, and increased investor demands. But what makes this new is the approach and the urgency. It's time. Got to get it done. In the corporate sphere, sustainability gets a lot of attention, but little clarity is provided, as many stakeholders and data have to be managed, along with basic systems and evolving regulatory framework. More focus is needed. Keeping track of the truth through digitalization, I love that word, is crucial for mitigating sustainability risks. ESG measures can be scaled, risks can be mitigated, and sustainability ROI, return on investment, can be improved. I have four really, really smart guests on this topic. They're all passionate. I want you all to give me a passionate smile there. You're happy to be here. There you are, everybody we've got with us. Shuchi Nijahawan, I hope I said that right. Is that okay?
That's all right.
Wave hello. I'll get there. Indranil Roy Chowdhury, did I get that right? Okay, we got one there. We have Joseph Nayim. Hi, Joseph. And we have Thomas Harding. Thank you for the easy name, Thomas. And I'm going to ask them about the urgency of organizations to tackle this now and the key do's and don'ts on our topic today, ESG and sustainability risks. Still not serious about it? And the byline, the sideline to that is, well, it's time. Get on board and let's get going. So welcome, everybody, again. This is Innovate and Servitize, Bonnie D. in the house. Let's go around and get some real introductions here. Shuchi, would you please do us the honor of introducing you? Tell us a little bit about you, your company, and why you're so engaged on this topic. Welcome, Shuchi.
Thank you for having me, Bonnie. Hi, everyone. I'm Shuchi Nijhawan, and I head Global Sustainability Practice and Global Human Resources for ICA Software Solutions. Now, ICA is a global leader in providing SaaS solutions, and we have a global cloud platform for procurement, trading and risk management, supply chain, sustainability, and treasury. A lot of buzzwords there. But here in my role at ICA, I usually step outside of the quintessential environmental heavy narrative in ESG to help organizations, including my own, bring the social and governance metrics in the ESG at the forefront as well. So 4 years back, I've helped launch the first ever blockchain-based marketplace for coffee farmers in the world. This blockchain intervention was done to bring a sustainable, responsible way of doing business between coffee growers in India, about 300,000 of them, and global coffee traders. So sustainability has been something that I've been chartering on for about 5 years now, and I'm very pleased to be speaking on this topic today. I'm also a certified GRI consultant and a carbon accountant. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Shuchi. We're very happy to meet you and very excited to have you on the panel. Let's go around the table. Joseph, you're up. Joseph, same. Please introduce yourself. There you go. What do you do? A little bit about your company. And why are you here? What's exciting about ESG and sustainability? Joseph, go.
Thanks so much, Bonnie. Thanks for having me. And thanks for the great intro. Joseph Nyam, founding partner of Calmus Capital. We're dedicated investment advisory focused on sustainability and impact. I've been at the heart of alternative investments and sustainability for the last, well, since 2007, actually. We were working at a fund of hedge funds where we were the first to do an SRI fund of hedge fund back in 2007. And since then, I've been having a parallel career looking at how at the intersection of how to scale the purpose of money in looking at how alternative and all forms of investment should innovate, culminating in effectively helping the PRI rewrite and redesign their reporting framework, or helping them with their academic content, as well as a variety of asset managers, asset owners, in how they adapt their processes and look at cross-asset investments from an impact and sustainable perspective. From your last point was actually quite interesting. Why am I here? And it probably goes to why the name Calmus. Herbert Calmus was the founder, was the creator of three-strip photography that founded Technicolor, the one company that took us from black and white movies to color movies. I think there's no better analogy for what we're seeing in the world of finance. Sustainability, ESG, I don't agree with the statistics that this is how much it's growing and these are the number of ESG funds going on. It's like, I don't believe we will have sustainability or ESG funds, just as much, it'll just be investments, just as much as it's not called color movies anymore, it's just called movies. We were in a black and white world of risk and returns. And technology and data are now allowing us to look at values, proxies for value that we were not able to see before. It's just an evolution of most industries, and in finance in particular, that allow us to adapt our processes to one where we see and diffuse the reality of the world around us in color, just as much as we will with the intersection of ES and G. And look forward to discussion on how that transpires. But effectively, actually, the name of the company isn't so much after the inventor of three-strip photography, more his wife, Natalie Calmus, who has her name on more movie credits than anyone else in history, having been the consultant that was deployed with every Technicolor camera and interfered, so people thought, but actually she was coordinating how the directors, to the producers, to the stage lights, to pretty much every aspect of movie making, it needs to adapt to how you see things in color. And actually, when I started looking at materiality matrices, it reminded me a lot of her color matrices in terms of what colors go well together. And I don't think we'd be able to see if the world in color, just as much as we won't be able to invest in a world without having the color of sustainability, if it weren't thanks to the people such as herself.
Thank you very much. That was fascinating. And I have to tell you, they say there's a good woman, a smart woman behind every successful man. I don't know if you know, but Bertha Benz was the one who helped finance from her fortune, financed Benz. And she took the first long ride in the first car that Benz created. She went along for the ride and he took her out in the middle of the country somewhere in the countryside. She was the one who put the money up for that first foray out into the field in a motor car. So I remember that story from years ago. Joseph, thank you. That's fascinating. And today, if somebody wants to make an impact, what do? They show a film in black and white. they go back to the original, right? That you say, it's in black and white. Look at the contrast. So anyway, thank you very much for the history. Indranil, you're up next. We want to know who you are, what you do, why are you here, and what's so exciting about this topic for you. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm Indranil Rochaudhary, and I represent a company called Dot Create. Now, Dot Create is basically into energy management. And in this part of the world, our organization helps integrate renewable energy for organizations which have their renewable energy obligations. So that's something that we are doing. Dot Create, the dot stands for the potential of an atom. An atom has a lot of energy, right? And when atoms coalesce, they give meaning to life. So they become, when atoms coalesce, they become a Bonnie, they become a Shuchi or a Joseph or a Tom, and they give meaning to life. And the potential of an atom, because we are an energy company, the potential of an atom is huge, right? So when we make connections at work, we are able to make an impact to the world as well. So that is the narrative of the organization, and that is the core value of the organization. So over here, what my role is, that I help making sense of. So while our organization is helping integrate renewable energy, I also help in integration of renewable energy credits or RECs, and that helps in carbon credits and so on and so forth. So I help organizations make sense of the different reporting frameworks that sustainability and ESG is involved in these days. And it gets a little tedious, so I help my clients make sense of what and how to report their sustainability matrices. And I hope I'm making them see the value in investing in sustainability. So that's pretty much about me. And that is what is exciting, because at least for my children, I feel that we need to make a bigger impact for the future of our kids in sustainability. We've just been utilizing too much.
Indranil, I was fascinated when you described the dot in front of the company. That's really, really cool. So thank you very much. And now we'd like to hear from our fourth panelist, Tom Harding. Tom, would you please introduce yourself? Tell us what you do and what's your excitement about this topic. Tom, welcome.
Sure, with pleasure. Thanks very much, Bonnie. And thanks to all my other panelists and to Echo Software for hosting us today. And nice to meet you all in the audience. My name's Tom Harding, and I've recently set up a new firm in this space, ESGRS, highly specialized in regulatory solutions, providing both technology and technical consulting and implementation services, both to financial services clients and corporates of all descriptions. The reason why I've decided to do this is because the world is crying out for change right now, all around us, and sustainability regulations are driving that faster than we've ever seen before. And so the intent here is to help everybody, to help companies of all descriptions, and to help address one of the biggest challenges that we're all facing right now.
Thank you, Tom. Very interesting. When did you start the company? How old is your company?
So, good question. The company was incorporated just last week, Bonnie, and this is one of the first engagements that I've had as founder and CEO.
I want everybody a round of applause for Tom. Come on, we value entrepreneurs. We value innovation. Look at the title of this show, Innovate and Servitize Your Business for Balanced Growth. I just ducked down so they can see it. So Tom, congratulations on that. We wish you good, everything good going forward. So now's the time of the show where I'm going to ask my guests to explain. They sent me some opening quotes that are from fictional TV or movie characters. I think a lot of movie characters today are song lyrics that on the surface have absolutely nothing to do with the topic. And they're going to explain why they picked the quote and what it does have to do with the topic. Shuchi is up first. You picked a quote from Rick Dicker, a.k.a. Agent Dicker, voiced by Jonathan Banks. The movie is Incredibles 2, 2018 American computer animated superhero film. Rick Dicker is a supporting character, and he's a minor character. He's a government agent of the former NSA, that's National Supers Agency, and he's there to clean up Supers' accident. And I think they make him retire at the end of the movie. Here's the quote. You want to get out of the hole? First, you're going to have to put down the shovel. Shuchi, this is a brilliant quote. How did you find this? And tell us how it relates to our topic. Go ahead.
It is a quote that I love a lot, because this is something that my son and I, he's an 8-year-old boy, we watched together, and this is one of his favorite quotes from the movie. We talk about this a lot in the football field for him, trying to draw several comparisons. But for me, especially in sustainability, why this is important is because a lot of organizations are talking about it, but nobody is really digging down deep and doing anything as basic as laying the foundation to begin somewhere. So you really have to talk about the large things, the big things, doing good for the environmental, social, and governance components. Well, my dear friends, you're first going to have to dig down dirty, get your hands dirty and dig in deep. And that's why I chose this quotation today, Bonnie.
Thank you very much. And I think the other part is stop digging the damn hole, right? Just stop doing what you were doing so you can get out on the other side. Thank you, Shuchi. I appreciate that. I haven't seen The Incredibles yet, and people come with the really cool quotes from that movie. I'm going to have to go see it. I'm sure it's streaming somewhere for me. Thank you very much, Joseph. You have picked a quote from Dr. Randall Mindy, played by, oh my goodness, Leonardo DiCaprio. The movie Don't Look Up. Am I allowed to say it that way? 2021, almost recent American apocalyptic satire film. Mindy is an astronomy professor at MSU, that's Michigan State University, and Kate Diabaski, played by Jennifer Lawrence, he's her teacher. She's a candidate in astronomy. As the Earth's doom approaches, Dr. Mindy turns to his loved ones around the room and he says, "We really did have everything, didn't we? I mean, when you think about it." Did you know that Leonardo DiCaprio put that line in the movie, Joseph? He went to them and he went to the final editors and he said, "You got to leave that line in." They said, "I don't know, it's pretty heavy." And he said, "You got to leave it in." That's where it came from. So we really did have everything, didn't we? Talk to me, Joseph.
I'm sorry to make it a heavy one, but it is that heavy. To lighten it up, though, let me unpack it. But yes, look, everyone's always concerned about what time horizon we think of how well we have it. Are we talking about financial markets? Are we talking about our personal income and returns and what our immediate needs are? Are we talking about long-term environment and surroundings that we have? In both cases, unfortunately, we've had it very, very good. And our expectations are always that it's perpetual growth and ongoing happiness, which is unfortunately not the direction we're heading. It could be, but so far, the direction we're taking in the world of investing, in the world of the economic system we have around us, and the realities and constraints that the world is imposing on us, I think that quote pretty much does do justice on the heaviness that we face.
Thank you. And it is a heavy topic. We're not demeaning or belittling it at all. We're trying to look at it from the enterprise standpoint. And the quotes I read in the beginning about the statistics, we may agree or disagree, but the point is something needs to be done, right, Joseph?
It is.
And the companies that say they're doing something aren't there yet because it's a big task at hand. So let's keep going. I'm looking at the quote Indranil has sent us. This is from the movie. Oh, also Don't Look Up. Oh my goodness gracious me, oh my. We don't usually get two quotes from the same movie. This is a scene where President Orlean, played by the one and only fabulous Meryl Streep, says, so how certain is this? And Leonardo DiCaprio's character, Dr. Mindy, says, "There's 100% certainty of impact." And the president says, "Please don't say 100%. And an aide says, "Can we just call it a potentially significant event?" And the president says, "Yeah." And Kate Diablaski, Jennifer Lawrence, says, "But it isn't potentially going to happen. It is going to happen." Dr. Mindy, exactly. 99.78% to be exact. And Jonah Hill plays Jason Orlean. "Oh, great. Okay, so it's not 100%. And Dr. Teddy Oglethorpe, Rod Morgan, says, "Well, scientists never like to say 100%. And Kate says, "But it's not even close to 70%. And here's the quote, Indranil, forgive me, I had to get the scene in here. Here's the quote that he says. She says, "You cannot go around saying to people that there's 100% chance that they're going to die. You know, it's just nuts." I don't do a good Meryl Streep impersonation. Indranil, I had to do the scene because it leads up to, there's so much in that scene. Talk to me. How'd you find this one?
So the thing is that although it was a comedic satire, but the thing is that it is a reality of life that we're all facing. And that is one of the challenges that all of us in the sustainability world are facing. Where you've got the IPCC who've been telling us for the longest time that the world is doomed. But we somehow have this ostrich syndrome, you know, where we've kept our head in the sand. We are avoiding the obvious feelers that is being given out. And now this year, of course, we can see the world over the climatic changes that are happening and they're affecting us. And we are doomed, for the lack of a better word. And yeah, that is pretty much it. It really sums it up. Somehow we've just been keeping our head in the sand. We're trying to avoid the reality of life. And now it's really here. Looming. It's here. Yeah.
It's here. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I love researching the quotes. I have so much fun. Okay. Thomas Harding. Tom is back with us. Tom picked a 6-word quote. I think it's the shortest one on the show today. And this is a phrase that's used to wish a group or an individual good luck, goodwill, and it's used when people are leaving somewhere. Okay, I'll get to the bottom of this. General Jan, J-A-N or Jan, Dodonna, played by an actor called Alex McCrindle, Star Wars, which was retroactively titled Star Wars Episode IV, that's 4, A New Hope, which was a 1977 American epic space opera film. You all know that. He's dismissing the rebel troops before the siege of the Death Star. Usually people think that Obi-Wan Kenobi said this, but he didn't. May the Force be with you is the quote. It's used 16 times, Tom, in the 7 Star Wars movies. There you go. May the Force be with you. How does that fit our topic today, Tom? Go ahead.
Sure. Thanks very much, Bonnie. And May the Force Be With You actually came to me fairly late on. I had an initial quote in mind, Welcome to the Party from Die Hard. But I thought that wasn't quite the right fit for an ESG and sustainability risk related podcast. And so I changed my mind and I thought, what's the real message here? What can I share with people that really resonates with this current challenge and the current immediacy of the problem that we're facing? And the only possible quote that I could come up with was, may the force be with you, because everybody needs help. I've been speaking to clients and affected financial market participants about this subject for 3 years, and everybody needs more help than they've currently got. Everybody is dealing with numerous different solution providers and service offerings and consultants, and still not prepared for the challenges that await and the immediate deadlines that are happening in January. And so we could probably all do with a little bit of a pep talk from the general from the Star Wars film. But I think it's something that we should certainly all take away from this podcast.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that, Tom. Let's go to our roundtable, our formal roundtable. We've been talking about the topic, kind of working our way into it through your introductions, through your passion statements, and through your quotes, but let's do this now. Shuchi, I'm putting you onto statement number 3 you sent me. I'm going to read just a little bit. You told me one sentence. I'm going to read two. I'm going to read two sentences and ask you to unpack it. And then we're briefly going to go around the table. We're going to ask Joseph and Indranil and Tom to take about 2 minutes each, because we have a lot of material to cover here. Take about 2 minutes each and agree or disagree with Shuchi. Don't be afraid. She's in a very good mood today. You can disagree. It's okay. Joseph, get ready. Here's what she says. Digitalization is indispensable for mitigating sustainability risks. The huge number of metrics and data that sustainability risks need to map against can no longer be mapped through Excels. Oh, my. And other manual interventions, which leave a large room for error. Shuchi, go ahead.
Right. So I think, digitalization is indispensable now, specifically as organizations are not just managing one or two different type of sustainability risks. The sheer number, quantum, type of sustainability risks are huge, and they differ. And to have digitalization would be to find a systematic way of collecting data, providing a single source of truth across the different stakeholders that are possibly using sustainability information, helping manage this data, providing analytics around it, action management, and then finally reporting it. How else would you do this in a systematic way if not automating it? In fact, one of the things that our clients often tell us is that what we are trying to struggle with right now is to understand what are the sustainability risks that we are running real time. I mean, typically by the time we end up collecting all the data, we end up running all the analysis around that data, massaging that data. The risks have already been taken care of. They've already happened. We've run those risks. We've had to pay fines, etc. already. So how do we get to know real time about these risks? And since we're trying to manage this all through spreadsheets, and I believe that if we have this done in an automated format, if we have done this through a system, it just makes it a lot more easier for organizations, including ours. We face it all the time as well, to manage those sustainability risks, because organizations need deep insights into their sustainability performance, right? Happy to hear different views.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that very much. Let's see how many different views we get. Joseph, you are virtually sitting next to Shuchi right now, so you're up. Talk, take about 2 minutes, agree or disagree. Either way is fine. We want to hear your thoughts. Joseph, go.
I fully agree. I'll go so far as to say that if you haven't caught up, or if at least tried your best to adapt your entire system with digitalization, you're not fit for purpose. If sustainability is the why, digitalization needs to be the how. And the why is redefining the complexity needed in terms of the agility that digitalization brings. Excel, let alone a variety of other tools which historically may have made sense in a black and white world, are just not fit for purpose in a technicolored world. You don't want to be walking around either as an investor or as a consumer, taxpayer, voter, or any other member of society in a color world wearing black and white glasses. You're going to either lose financially or in terms of how the outcomes that you're trying to shape will be done. There is just so much more complexity when you put red, blue, and green together and get the full spectrum of color than having an extra few columns on your Excel spreadsheet with E, S, and G. And that nuance is not an extra bit of detail that marketing simplification can get rid of. It is a necessity, and digitalization is the only agility that you can use to be able to start grasping with the systems change that's facing us.
Digitalization is, wow, that was a great statement you just made, Joseph. I appreciate that. Thank you for responding to Shuchi's opening comments. Indranil, you're up next. Join us. Thoughts on what Shuchi said and or what Joseph added. Go.
I couldn't agree with both of them. I mean, they're absolutely bang on. And I don't think so anybody's going to contradict what Shuchi has already said, because like I mentioned in my opening remarks, you know, there's so many reporting frameworks that it is just impossible to just stick to an old-fashioned Excel. Digitization would really help. And so organizations already have different CRMs which are recording all their different inputs with regard to all the activities that they're doing with regard to sustainability. And I think digitization just makes it easier for capturing data in different formats and it really helps in the reporting process, because most of the panelists would have an idea about the challenges which come with reporting. There are certain frameworks which report in a particular format, the others report in a different format, but we're essentially saying the same thing. To give a case in point, small case in point, GRI, which is one of the initial reporting frameworks, would report for energy. I'm reporting in kilowatt hour, whereas in another reporting framework like a SASB, I have to report the same thing in kilojoules. That's a small conversion, but it's very tedious, right? And that just makes the process longer. So just for convenience and for us to really concentrate more on the actual work of bringing about sustainable change, I think digitization is indispensable. So as Joseph so eloquently put it, if you're not digitized, you're not really invested in the whole cause of sustainability. So yeah, that's my bit.
Thank you very much. Tom, you're up. Let's talk to you. What do you think? Agree or disagree with any or all on Shuchi's topic? Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, thanks, Bunny. I mean, to be honest, I couldn't have said it better myself. Digitalization in ESG and sustainability bring together two of my favorite subjects, regulation and technology. The regulations are incredibly data hungry. you need an enormous amount of data, most of which is not even available or in existence right now in order to address them and to be compliant. Now, Excel spreadsheets, as referred to earlier, the traditional method of managing data and doing a basic form of analytics, to say the least, but that is not enough in this new technicolor world that Joseph has been referring to. Now, look at the technology of things. We're not just looking at artificial intelligence or machine learning anymore. There's all sorts of other new and innovative technologies out there, like natural language processing, robotic process automation, just to name a few. And so if you bring those two things together with a digital first type of approach, then you're going to succeed in this space. And if we think about data and technology for one more second, data has been really one of the most valuable commodities in the world in recent years, likened to oil, actually. But in the sustainability space, that has changed. It has changed from being oil, one of the most valuable commodities in the world, to being like water, one of the most abundant, yet still essential, valuable commodities in the world. And technology now allows you to change that water into wine.
Ah, interesting. Okay, we won't go into the background on that one, but thank you. Shuchi, this was your topic. Would you like to say anything back to your colleagues on the panel? Go ahead. Yeah,
other than the fact that I'm very happy when a lot of men agree to what I'm saying, I don't really want to make a comment there, but thank you, gentlemen. I do agree that technology on one hand and the data on the other hand are needed to marry with each other should we have to manage the sustainability risks better. So thank you for agreeing to that.
Thank you. You're very, very polite to get to them for agreeing. Joseph, let's go to your statement number two. I put it in the chat for you. I'm going to read just a couple of lines from this and let's see what's going on here. So you say corporate sustainability is a subject to a lot of attention it's getting right now, but not much clarity. Here's where we go. This is because incentives come from the top down, and our system has so far been calibrated to focus corporates on addressing me today. It takes time to shift to a system that considers us tomorrow. Joseph, wow, talk to us. Very interesting. This is change management. This is culture, right? This is a lot of things. Joseph, you're up.
This is about subjectivity. And we can have all the data in the world. And as Tom, I love his analogy in terms of oil going to water, but you can do so much with water. It's just a question of how you can make it into wine, but you can make it into whatever a variety of other things. And subjectivity when it comes to sustainability, sometimes in the eye of the beholder, but sometimes it's in terms of standardizing the right frameworks for things to be able to move as a system together. And that needs to come in through regulation, which is the stick, but also incentive structures, which is the carrot. And for incentive structures so far have been focused on a version of capitalism, which is me today, whether it's as an employee, as a service provider, as a company, as a competitor, as opposed to a collaborator, as opposed to a different approach, which is capitalistic in its incentive structures. We're not going to say, well, listen, let's scrap that. We had, a whole century of fighting over philosophy there. We've picked capitalism. It's just a question of how do we align incentive structures from the top down, whether it's how bonuses are calibrated and how debt is calibrated. I think interest rates are going to be one of the most powerful tools to fight climate change. How we adapt the plumbing of finance to do that? How do we adapt the regulations and the specificities of it? And going back to what Indranil mentioned on our previous topic, let me go into one specific example of where regulation will have unintended consequences, which will cause dislocations in the market, but it's going to take us in the right direction. So for example, SFDR or many of the other regulators are all agreeing at least on one criteria, which is carbon footprints and carbon intensity measures across portfolios. Going in, let's unpack that for a bit more. It's a question of saying, well, what is your emissions divided by the enterprise value? Sometimes it could be seen as the emissions divided by the revenues of companies. Let's agree, which one are we doing? Well, let's pick enterprise value. Well, that means that companies can take on more debt, and lo and behold, your enterprise value is much bigger and your carbon footprint is much lower. Are you including scope 3 or not? Well, can you offset that with carbon offsets? So if I'm a private equity firm and I'm saying, well, I need to adhere to what my incentives are telling me, I need to report my cross portfolio carbon footprint. Let me take on lots of debt and buy lots of carbon offsets. And there you go. Voila, I'm at net zero. unless there's some standards which come in and say you've got to be science target, SBTI, so science-based targets, which will actually adapt and go into the sophistication of saying that, no, you need to do as much as you can to reduce your actual emissions before being able to offset them. How do we measure scope three? So once we even agree on a single metric and on a single purpose, the nuances are so much more complex. The standardization is necessary, and there is areas where there is subjectivity, but there are areas where there definitely is a need for an accelerated, cohesive approach. And carbon, for example, is probably going to be as ubiquitous as the dollar when we talk about measurement across portfolios and across investments, whether it's in divisions in every asset class. Real estate probably being the most ubiquitous and one of the most interesting examples to take us forward. But then that translates to pretty much all other activities.
Thank you. Very, very interesting. Let's go around the table. Agree or disagree? Indranil, you get the honor of being right next to Joseph on this round. Go ahead. I'm putting you on speaker view.
So I agree. I totally agree. And he actually went into the technicalities of it. But I think bottom line, what he's trying to say is that unless and until you do not incentivize the whole process of sustainability, let's not kid ourselves. No organization is getting into sustainability because their heart bleeds for the environment or their heart bleeds for the world. They're just looking at what is the financial benefit that they're going to be getting. And unfortunate as it is the reality of life. And it's just that now, because of so much of awareness, I feel that people are waking up. And because as a response to that, organizations are also looking at being sustainable. Now, the example that Joseph just mentioned about the scope three, are we involving scope three? Big organizations, which have come in the news in the past, and I'm not going to name them, but we all know the big organizations who've really been caught with their hands in the cookie jar, as it were, for greenwashing, for trying to say that they're sustainable, that they're not being sustainable. They open up for their scope one and scope two, they say that they are being sustainable. In the scope three, when you delve a little deeper, they've got these big manufacturing units, have got sweatshops running in the Southeast Asian parts of the world, where human resources, the conditions of their employees are appalling, And at the end of the day, it has to get more and more strict. And as Joseph rightly pointed out, we've done damage in so many different levels that once you go on to the micro level of really analyzing all the data, you realize that it's not really a black and white situation. You've got to kind of break it down into a particular format. You've got to incentivize with the carrot and stick approach, where, of course, you're going to be penalized, but at the same time, you have to encourage enterprise to really help them get onto the sustainability bandwagon. And the only way you can incentivize it is by making it financially beneficial for them. So, yeah.
Thank you very much. Very interesting topic around the table. And thank you for the scope details, Joseph, which led to some good comments from Indranil. Tom Harding, you're in a hotel lobby. That's why we're hearing all kinds of stuff going on in the background. We should have said that in level set in the beginning, but we're still glad you're here. You're a real champion trying to get on the show. Tom, we'd like you to comment on what Joseph shared. We can hear, they're throwing dishes now. I don't know if that's in your honor. Tom, briefly comment on what Joseph said and Indranil. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Bonnie, and apologies to everyone in the audience for any interference or distraction or backgrounds. I'm doing my very best here. And first of all, I just wanted to say thanks to Joseph and all of the other panelists for their incredibly insightful comments on the subject of sustainability. I'm delighted. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be surrounded by so many sustainability gurus, in my own words. And from a sustainability perspective, it really is so multifaceted that there are numerous different challenges or different ways to address those challenges, dependent on the seat that you're in, dependent on the organization, dependent on the department, dependent on the industry, dependent on all of these different factors. And sustainability really is permeating every single different one of these.
Thank you very much. Let's go around to Shuchi. You're wrapping this round up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've been itching to talk about it. I'm just circling back, Bonnie, to the question that you essentially started to ask, which, you know, rallied around this entire conversation. You talked about, you know, corporate sustainability is subject to a lot of attention, but there's not much clarity. So what's going wrong with enterprises, right? What is the issue, so to speak? So I completely agree with what all three of the panelists have said, but I think primarily one of the reasons why we see this confusion, lack of clarity, is because there is an intent gap. I love this term, this intent gap, which is the gap between intent and action, because while it's a great marketing conversation for everybody, you know, it spearheads a lot of brouhaha, but organizations don't want to invest themselves in putting structures supporting it within their, you know, constructs. And why is that? There's some kind of an either or, because executives behave as though they must choose between the largely social benefits of the sustainable products or processes and the financial costs of doing so. But if you look at it, isn't it simply about the fact that if you were to actually become environment friendly by reducing the inputs that you use, you would actually end up lowering costs. I think organizations are not really very clear on the focus between the top line and the bottom line, and that's what leads to this entire confusion at their end. That's what I'd have to say.
Thank you very much. Joseph, this was your topic we went around on. Anything you want to say back to your three colleagues on the panel?
I do, and thank you very much for all the insights there. And I'd like to pick up on one of the last things that Suchi just brought up, which is the intent. And I think this is at the very source of a lot of the confusion and claims of greenwashing. There is a lot of greenwashing, but there's even more claims of greenwashing. Everyone's walking around with stones in their pockets looking for windows to throw them at, and visibility is giving us lots and lots of windows. So there's a difference in terms of the concept of dual materiality. Are we talking about inside out or outside in? Are we talking about how the outside world is affecting the profit and loss from my operations? Or are we talking about the effect of the operations that I undertake as a company on the outside world? The longer your time horizon, the more those two converge. The shorter your time horizon, the more those two can be very different. And I'll use a tangible example, such as a gold mining company. If you're a gold miner, and let's take it from a debt perspective. If I'm lending money to a gold miner, and they're going to spend it on capital expenditures to react to a specific factor, which everyone agrees on is material for gold mining, which is water. Great. Water scarcity. Am I going to spend that money to buy machines which are going to be more efficient to dig just as much and protect my operations and profit and loss to make more, to deal with less water to come in and cool my machines? Or am I going to spend that money on reducing the amount of mercury that goes into the water once it pumps back out and doesn't poison the village downriver, which, you know, today might not really affect my profit and loss, but it will in 5 years when my permit is revoked, when I lose my permit, my license and permit to operate, and have other types of social losses that will be incurred. If it's short-term debt, I probably don't care as much. If it's long-term debt, that's very important. That applies to pretty much every activity, and where the clarity is needed, even if everyone is paying a lot of attention and a lot of specificity to looking at data in terms of very single factor from a reliable service provider on water issues for that gold mining company, well, what do you mean by that? It could be a nuance, but it's a very important one, because intent and the intent gap and understanding where you're coming from a dual materiality perspective is critically important. And that works backwards to how the incentive structures are aligned and therefore how the claims of greenwashing and where intent is expected. So just to wrap up on that point, I think we're doing a great job globally in addressing the subject, in accelerating regulation, in accelerating data and proliferation of understanding. There's a lot more to go, but standardization of intent is critical, because in some areas it can be subjective, in others it's just a question of aligning what is meant so that we can get on with it and align incentives to accelerate what needs to be done financially and environmentally.
Thank you, Joseph. Great starting point around. Now you see how it works. A good discussion statement sparks the ideas. Tom, you have a 30-second comment. You were nodding to me in the chat. You want to talk. Tom, go real fast.
Thanks, Bonnie. Appreciate it. So I just wanted to jump in here because we're talking about this from an enterprise or a company perspective, but there's also a separate way of looking at it from the consumer or from the client perspective. And so Joseph mentioned the gold mines, right? And so as a purchaser of gold, for example, somebody who's buying a gold necklace, what's important to you? And therefore that is very important to the gold mining enterprise or corporation. And the same goes in every single walk of life. This week, I bought a pair of trainers made out of recycled bottles for solely that reason. As a 30-year-old single male, I purchased a washing machine, which was twice as expensive as the bottom line number because it had a good energy rating. Now, did I take that energy rating as red? No, I scratched one or two layers beneath the surface and looked into those claims, understood how they were making them, the data points that they were using as reference, and what the competitors were saying, and decided that I was making the right decision.
Thank you, Tom. Good point. So be a responsible, thoughtful, thought-through consumer. From the bottom up, from the top down. You got to meet in the middle, right, Joseph? I'm going to move on to a statement from Indranil. We've got about 8 minutes left. Let's see if we can make a quick go around on this, Indranil, and then we'll see if we can squeeze in one at a time. So Indranil says, I feel with the advent of severe climactic upheavals. We all know what the weather's been recently all over the world and the rise in environmental consciousness the world over. We as a people have finally started to realize the importance of integrating sustainability practices in our business. So let's talk a little bit about the climate impact. Indranil, go ahead.
So I'm in a place called New Delhi, and this year, would you believe it, the temperature went up to 50 degrees C in the city, and it has been sweltering. As I was growing up, and most of the people in my generation, as they were growing up, it hasn't gone up. Peak summers haven't gone up above 40 degrees C. You can do the calculation in Fahrenheit. It's quite a bit. And the number of back here in India, the temperature, the world over, temperature changes are not. We are not insular, right? You can see the upheavals happening across Europe, across America. The way forest fires are raging all over the world. And what Tom just mentioned, that looking from the perspective of the consumer, these days when the environment is in such a bad state, when your kids are having heat strokes, they can't go to school, they can't attend school because it's too hot outside, it really affects us, right? And everybody is now talking about climate change, and our children, no matter where we work, our environment around us, our near and dear ones, they are complaining that you guys are working. Why aren't you doing enough to save the environment? What are you doing? You are everywhere. You just need the luxuries of life, running air conditioners, multiple air conditioners, and you're dumping that ambient heat into the environment and you're raising the temperatures. And that is affecting, so we are answerable, directly answerable to our next generation. And I feel all that discussion around has really increased the sense of awareness about the environment. And I guess world over, everybody's now talking about sustainability. And I think we are a little late, but yeah. We are way under 2, below 2. We've all been talking about keeping the temperature under 2, 1.5. I think we're not going to be getting there.
Thank you, Indranil. I want to go around the table, but Tom, when I bring you in, because you're sitting next to Indranil now, I'm just going to read a little bit from your statement number one, which I think speaks to what Indranil. So we're going to combine because we have very few minutes left. So you say sustainability is a global movement. Everyone, everywhere needs to be discussing it. Every company needs help in this space in some way, shape, or form. So Tom, why don't you add to what Indranil said, and then we'll get a quick comment from Shuchi and Joseph, and then we're going to wrap up. Go ahead, Tom. 2 minutes.
Gotcha. Thanks, Bonnie. So, it's a perfect combination, actually, my key point and Indranil's last statement, because in order to save the environment and in order to really address this challenge, there's no one single lever that we can pull. It's not just about turning the lights off. It's not just about divesting from the worst emitters. It's not just about engaging with those that are funding or moving towards the transition. It's every single piece of this puzzle that we all need to be addressing at once. We had 40 degree heats over here as well in London, in Dronil, and that was pretty well unbearable. And going through this process of setting up my own company, I have ummed and ahed about whether I should actually set up an air conditioning business, because that's going to be significantly in demand in the very near future. But it doesn't fit with my purpose. It doesn't help to save the environment. And that is what we all need to take very seriously.
Thank you very much. Brief and to the point. You made your point. Let's go around quickly. Shuchi, comments, please. And then Joseph, you'll get the last word. Shuchi.
All right, great. So pre and post COVID, right? We weren't talking so much about the climate change. We were talking about it subtly, but we weren't talking about it as much as we did post COP26. And suddenly, when the world shut off, we are not traveling. None of us is going to offices. Physical offices are now also becoming a remote possibility. We all have hybrid workspaces. We see a much cleaner, better environment, a healthier place for all of us to work in. We don't have to necessarily. I mean, it's made that reality very obvious to us that we don't have to go to offices every day, burn the kind of fuel we do to go to those offices. And we are absolutely all right to work wherever we're working. I mean, we've been doing sales remotely, so none of our salespeople are traveling globally, and the carbon emissions or the carbon footprint of each salesperson has gone down. Yes, what it does to the airlines industry, hospitality industry, a lot of those things are under debate. But to each individual and organization, suddenly, we're thinking of ways that we are becoming more responsible, that we can contribute to every single part of a sustainable supply chain. And that's happened very frequently. That's happening very frequently now, especially post COP26. I think something had to happen. Some intervention had to happen for us to actually get shaken up and take a look. And the COVID was that for us. So I'm actually quite happy that kind of a change was brought about by something as significant as COVID.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we got to look at some silver lining there, right, Shuchi? We have to look at some positive outcome for what we all went through. Joseph, 2 minutes, the last word. Go ahead.
I'd summarize it into, we don't have time for this, and we need more time for that. We don't have time for this in that it's way too late for us to be debating or relying on moral alignment, on consumer desires, on trends. We just don't have time. We don't have time to debate whether, hey, should we invest in carbon capture? Should companies look at carbon reduction and what is morally aligned for this and that? And are all ESG factors equal? Sometimes there will have to be sacrifices, and in many cases is just way more complicated. Where do we do need more time is to get past that and say, well, sometimes things that might not sound popular, that might have to make some compromises and might require a lot more depth and nuance, we need to take the time, because that is the hard work we all need to do. And I'll give you two examples for that. I think that one of the biggest underappreciated solutions for climate globally lies in blockchain, and how blockchain can be adapted to accelerate climate solutions. That's very far away from the conversation we're having today and the mandate anyone has to even use the word blockchain and climate in a non-negative way. Another one would be hedge funds. You cannot look at hedge funds and think, oh, wait, why would I look at that? Although those have the potential for having more climate impact than pretty much most other investment strategies. When we talk about, well, there is no one single lever, no, I think it is a bit more complicated. Interest rates. If we were to think about interest rates in a much more sophisticated way, thanks to the nuance of data and technology that allows frameworks for how lending can be more sophisticated, having a blunt instrument like one interest rate for everything everywhere does not make sense. So there are mechanisms, they're more complex. We need to take the time to go into the sophistication of it. And we just don't have time to say, well, it's not marketing friendly. Let's simplify it and waste our time otherwise.
Thank you very much, Joseph. I want to thank our panel. You all have so much to say. We had a limited amount of time, but I appreciate all of the work you did, all of you up front, getting your statements to me, picking your quotes, getting ready. I appreciated your bios. You're all very talented, very smart, and very committed to the good of this topic. And that's why you're all here. I think we all need to do a shout out to Ankit Shah at ECHA for putting this together, as well as, yes, Shuchi, let's get some applause there. Ankit worked very hard behind the scenes with me to get this all together. We also have to thank the sponsors of this series, Michel Serrier, former client and colleague of mine. Now he's a client. He was at SAP. He started his own consultancy in Europe called InnoLifters. And we have Servitize UG, the founder of that, Mark Alexander Winter, who was the co-sponsor of this series. And a thank you to my engineer today, Matt, at Voice America Radio and the Business Channel team. Everybody wave goodbye from Innovate and Servitize Your Business for Balanced Growth. That's the idea. Bonnie D signing off. Panelists, don't go away. We're going to take some pictures. Everybody wave. Bye-bye. Thanks again for tuning in to Innovate and Servitize Your Business for Balanced Growth, co-presented by InnoLifters and Servitize. To keep the conversation going, email your questions and comments to michelle.serrier@innolifters.com. That's michelle.serrier@innolifters.com. Please join host Bonnie D. Graham again here on the Voice America Business Channel. We wish you a week of game-changing innovation.